Hi, this is Margaret Robinson with the Two-Spirited Roundtable Project, and I'm here today with Art Zuckel. We're going to be talking a bit about tradition and practices for staying healthy.
Hi. So what we do as an agency is a number of things. So if somebody comes to us and says that they need access to an elder, we will help them to identify and seek out an elder. And sometimes an elder may be located at Dotem Kenoshamig, I hope I'm saying that right, at Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development at St. Clair Avenue, because they have a visiting elder program there, right? But at the same time too, there are other elders situated in the Greater Toronto Area that may be at another agency, for example, Native Child and Family Services, or over at the Native Canadian Centre. And each year there is an elders conference there. And so if that's one of the requests that people are asking for us, we will help them and direct them in the right direction to hook up with an appropriate elder.
When might someone want to see an elder?
Probably like if things are out of balance. As Aboriginal people, when we look at ourselves, we look at ourselves holistically. The body, mind, spirit, and emotion all need to be in balance. Now, if one of those things are out of balance, so for example, if somebody has passed away, for example, and somebody is emotionally struggling through that, they may seek out an elder just to sort of get some guidance from that person on how, as part of our tradition, how do we celebrate that person's life, first of all, and how do we honor and recognize, you know, that individual, right? So those might be some of the ways that people are accessing. So at the same time, culturally, our agency is located in a structure that doesn't allow us to do smudging. But we do have the tobacco, sage, sweetgrass to, you know, give to our members if they ask for it. And at the same time, we don't have the facilities to do a sweat. So right now in the Toronto, every third Monday of each month is a two-spirit sweat over at Anishinaabe Health on Girard Street. And also at the same time, more recently, the two-spirit women wanted to get together to do drumming. So it started out at our office, and they were doing it in the evening, which was convenient. But more recently, now they've moved their drumming nights over to the Native Women's Resource Center. So that's how, as agencies, something starts off at one agency and sometimes is rotated and helped out by other agencies in terms of space and, mm-hmm. and cultural and those kinds of ceremonies.
What health impact does participating in ceremony have for two-spirited people?
Well, I think, you know, some people, if I can use the 60 scoop and I can use all of the things that ever happened to us, residential school, all of those really terrible things, when people find out that they're Aboriginal, first of all, mm-hmm. that they do have an identity, and secondly, that they are two-spirit, and when they start down that path of finding out who they are, and then when they realize that they can access all of these cultural teachings, it really improves their overall health tremendously. So being hooked up to culture is very significant for the well-being and the health of our community. And that's how that ties in together. So if people don't know where to access these events, sweats, drumming circles, those kinds of cultural activities, then they're lost and they don't know where to seek out to find these activities and see if they're happening.
What's it like talking to an elder about sexual identity issues?
Well, that can be quite challenging sometimes. In the past, you know, some of our, we thought supporting elders were on board with us, but after a while we were found out that they were homophobic as well. So we ended up having to not use them anymore, to put it in a nice way. Mm. In other words, we fired them. And I think that needs to happen, and people need to stand up and, you know, be who they are and be free to discuss these things with elders, you know. And it might be one-on-one, you know, and it might be not in a public forum. And that might be more comforting to Two-Spirit people to do it in that way. And then doing it in a traditional way of, you know, presenting a, tobacco to an elder, that is a very sacred space for the individual and that elder to come together to talk about the issue that needs to be discussed. Cultural safety. Yes.
Can you say some more about cultural safety? How would you describe it for people who aren't familiar with the term?
I think it's a place where, and I can use some examples too, when we were helping people on their path, they were not knowledgeable about the ceremonies or customs or some of our protocols. And so for them, it's a frightening time and an uncertainty. You know, how do I participate? How do I feel comfortable in these situations? But once, you know, so for example, if a young Two-Spirit man is being invited to help with a sweat lodge and he's being assigned to be the fire keeper and he's instructed on what that means and what that entails, and then he experiences it, he then becomes, you know, more stronger around his feelings and his being able and, you know, the responsibility of being a fire keeper. He carries that quite highly, you know, and it, you can just see the life coming back into him when they're given that honor, you know, to do that, and where they had never had that honor before, and then they understand it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same way when people are learning our songs. You can see the bewilderment in the beginning, but after they understand and what that whole process is all about, you can see the joy that comes to them, that comes back to them, that peacefulness, you know, around being culturally safe within doing some of our ceremonies, you know, and being instructed in a good way by some of our teachers.
What are some tips for people who want to get more involved in cultural activities but maybe don't know where to start?
I think we always talk to our kokoms, and our kokoms in my language is our grandmothers, our grandfathers. And I think that's a good starting part. They are the ones with our knowledge of our history and our ceremonies. And sometimes, you know, our kokoms are sometimes hiding and not feeling able to express themselves, or maybe thinking that, you know, the next generation is not interested. But, you know, they have that knowledge. It's there. And, you know, I think people just need to sort of seek that out and see where these individuals are in our communities that can help them.
In your own life, how has ceremony worked for you?
Oh, my God. For me, from day one, from the moment of my birth up until now, is making ceremony part of my life. Now, I use an example. I have two younger sisters. In our culture, the naming ceremony for them would be held in August. That's when they were born. Mm-hmm. And they were given their Indian names at sunrise. And if you can imagine how early the sun gets up in August, as a young child, I was woken up and asked to participate in the ceremony, the naming ceremony. But as a child too, then you were instructed to be quiet and observe and respect the process that was happening, and then to learn that way. So that there's many teachings there, you know, around participating, around respecting the event that's happening. I come from a culture where we pick wild rice, and one of the things that we do every year in the fall is the picking of the wild rice, and the ceremony that we do, that everybody gives a handful to a community pot, and that community pot is then made up in the preparation of a meal, and then we gather around the blanket to do the ceremony. And I just want to add, when I was a youngster, I was outed in my community by somebody who was conducting the ceremony. And I just want to say also too that the women in my community came to my defense and scolded the person who was doing the ceremony and said, this is not a time and place for you to say those words and to do this disrespectful thing, that so we want you to continue on with the ceremony. That's, you know, all those things happen for a reason. right? And I think all those things that I've experienced in my life through ceremony has made me stronger as a person and as an individual, knowing who I am and how I can express myself freely without being judged by others.
How does having that background of knowing who you are affect the way that you respond when you do encounter people who are homophobic?
I think one of the things is, you know, giving them the tools, the knowledge that we have now. And I speak to our leaders and I speak to our First Nations leaders. So, for example, when we're having an event here in the Greater Toronto Area, in 2006, we were inviting the world to come here to Toronto. And traditionally, I went to the Mississaugas of New Credit First Nations and I offered tobacco to the chief and I asked them, can you come to Toronto and welcome the world and the people who are living with HIV and AIDS to Toronto? And he agreed, right? And doing those kinds of things, taking that kind of stance, helps to address homophobia. As small as it may seem, it's doing it over and over again. And even to our community leaders here in Toronto, they support us like you wouldn't believe, you know. But I know that it doesn't happen all over Canada. The Native Women's Resource Center, for example, we have a good working relationship with that agency. And Native Child and Family Services, the Aboriginal Legal Services of Toronto, and so the list goes on. Mm-hmm. They respect us and we respect them. 25 years later, it's still continuously being there, being responsible, showing up, and doing your part to be included as part of the community. And that helps to address the discrimination, the homophobia, and all of those other things, because we're always at the table.
What kind of issues are unique to your organization in that you focus on HIV/AIDS? Are there other health issues that are particular to that community or that you think maybe impact that community greater than?
One of the things around other issues is, I would say that mental health is an issue for our community. Substance use. We know these issues exist in our community and we need to take a stance around harm reduction. Our agency, we have a policy on harm reduction. Other agencies don't have a policy on harm reduction and therefore would turn our people away. So at our agency, people can come in here under the influence and we will not turn them away unless they're being overtly, you know, violent, you know. And then we take the next step and ask them to leave, right? But when you look at those things, those are just sort of the tip of the iceberg, right? So there are still diabetes. There are many issues in our community that have not surfaced that can be a priority for us. So diabetes, heart disease, inactivity around being obese. But generally, you know, like some of these issues are the result of our experiences as two-spirit people impact our health. But primarily we're focused on HIV and AIDS right now, and that's our funding, right?
What are things that two-spirited people can do to take care of their own mental health?
Many things. I think being part of ceremony, being part of the community helps to go in a long way in addressing mental health. But when somebody is experiencing mental health issues, it's the individual's not responsibility, I don't want to use that word, but they need to recognize that they are having mental health issues, right? And there are a number of agencies out there that can help us. And the Center for Addiction and Mental Health is one that I think of almost immediately.
How do you find that the services or the experience of getting mental health services has changed for Aboriginal people?
I think in the beginning, I think it's that reluctance, even from us as a agency, of doing this 72-hour notification of a professional coming in to diagnose somebody with a mental health issue. Because one of our concerns is that once we do that, we may ostracize that community member forever.
You mean because of the stigma associated with mental health?
Because of the stigma associated with mental health. But if we're able to work our way around that and not go that route and walk with and help guide our people to places like the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, it gets better for that those individuals, right? So one of the things that I'm doing in the future is I'm going to be doing a study on Two-Spirit people living with and affected by HIV and AIDS, substance use, and service utilization study my next one that I'm embarking on. Because I know that in our community, Two-Spirit people are using substances, who are living with HIV and AIDS, and also people who are not living with HIV and AIDS are doing substances. But when they go to access treatment, sometimes we are still faced by a lot of challenges. And I want to do a research project that helps to identify some of those challenges, why some of our people are not completing a treatment program, for example. And I kind of know the reason already, and that is because if a person is living with HIV and AIDS and they present themselves to a center, the issue of the substance use may be dealt with, but the issue of being two-spirit or other things may not be addressed in their treatment plan or recovery, and therefore they don't feel supported, and therefore they fail or quit.
So ideally, you think it would be great to have two-spirited identity incorporated into the treatment itself?
Yes, true. That's the goal. Okay. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, bringing on partners and community groups and agencies will help to bring this issue to light.
What do you feel is at the root of the use of substances within our community by two-spirited people?
Well, I think a number of things. It can lead from, you know, being asked to leave our communities, leaving our communities at a very early age, not being supported by your family, you know, a sense of loss, a sense of like, who am I? What am I doing? You know, and so the 60 scoop, you know, the residential school, all of these things impact a person's life. And, you know, some of these challenges or difficulties, you know, the only way to alleviate some of that pain is to use substances. And people do that, and then it becomes a problem because then they become addicted to these substances. But I've seen some of our two-spirit people come out the other side, experience that, go in for treatment, deal with the treatment, and then go on to have a better life.
I want to thank you for talking to me today, and I want to say I've really appreciated you taking the time.
All right, thank you.